Why stand still when you can run headfirst into a wall? You're listening to the Jocular Pugilists.
Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
He said what? They claim that? I'm seething with anger! I can't believe that! Are you kidding me?
That's the Tomas I know and love. If you couldn't guess, today we're talking about anger. And, you know, before we get into the history of anger and the, you know, all the different...
I need a drink after that.
I know. All the different wars about anger and all of that, we really wanted to look into, well, what is anger? So, Tomas,
yes,
did a little digging, and what'd you find out?
In actuality, I spent more time thinking about the subject matter than digging up information.
Sometimes that's digging.
Oh, okay. Okay. I looked at the definition of anger, and that's a strong feeling of annoyance, displeasure, or hostility. And immediately, I looked at some of the synonyms for anger. Wrath, rage, annoyance, displeasure, hostility, fury, infuriate, inflame, antagonize, aggravate. And when I thought about it, I thought perhaps all of these words mean something a little bit different.
So I'm so glad you asked the question and then said that, because anger is the emotion, and then something like rage or fury sounds like acting out, the acting out of anger, you know? Because I feel like you can know somebody's angry without ever seeing it in their in their physicality. But if somebody's enraged, they're being physical.
Are you talking to me?
Well, maybe he was talking to me. Was you talking to him? Because you was obviously talking to one of us. So what is it? Who? Who was you talking to?
So it sounds like different things to me.
It does. And I think that we wrap a lot of these words up into one tidy bow. And I don't know if that's a great thing.
Right. Why? Why do you think?
Because some of these words have the connotation of physicality, of being physical, of acting out on your anger. And I believe that that's very different. I think it's obviously different than not being physical. Although in today's day and age, maybe that's not so obvious.
That's a really good point. We're seeing a lot of people taking their anger to physical levels.
And I believe that anger has become a commodity that we do business with. In entertainment and politics and social discourse, they are always infuriating us, doing or saying something so insensitive that it takes an immense amount of control within your own group not to act out against them. And by the way, when I say the word they, I'm not using it.
You're not pointing a finger or also talking about the pronouns.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not using it as a pronoun. I'm using it as the group that's other than your group. That's right. The they. And by the way, when they is being used in that way against the group other than your group tends to be as a pejorative in a negative way. So,
well, and here's the thing. So we call it tribalism now. You know, that's sort of the word that we use to explain what you're talking about. And it's gotten a lot worse. But when you think about it, what makes no sense about tribalism is that you probably belong to multiple tribes. And some of those tribes, just like you said, let's say you're politically left-leaning.
Right.
And you're also a musician who loves Southern rock. Well, that group or that tribe is going to intersect with maybe a conservative group who also loves Southern rock and country, you know? And all of a sudden, you have something in common.
I don't know if you know this, but Lynyrd Skynyrd got in trouble a little while ago because they use the Confederate flag in the background in their concerts. They usually have a Confederate flag, or at least they used to, and they got in trouble for that. Now, you might think that that Confederate flag tells you everything about them as a person, but it doesn't. And in fact, I my belief, although I don't know for sure, but my belief is that they're pretty liberal-minded people.
They definitely are.
And in fact, if you listen to the lyrics, you know, they have gun control lyrics. They have... They're relatively liberal guys, so it definitely wasn't used in the way that people might think it was being used. Mr. Saturday Night Special, got a barrel that's blue and gold. They ain't good for nothing, but put a man 6 feet in a hole. They're relatively liberal guys. So it definitely wasn't used in the way that people might think it was being used.
Well, I'll say it's not great.
All right, throughout the whole Confederate flag thing, just historical context. People don't want to take historical context into consideration when crucifying somebody, meaning that you should know exactly what I know now, even if you were alive in the 1700s. They didn't. They didn't know what you know now. It seems obvious to me, but it certainly doesn't in groupthink.
And here's the other thing. You know, I want to ask you if you've had this kind of situation that's a problem with groups, with being part of a group and staying and wanting to be part of a group, right? And this goes right to what you're talking about. So in my life, I've had situations where I bowed to the group because I was afraid to not be a part of the group. And by doing that, I've hurt somebody else. And specifically, I can think of somebody in high school that he was this guy who's a little bit sheepish and abused a lot. I thought he was very funny. And I wanted to be nice to him, so I was nice to him whenever I could be. You know what I mean? In class, I wasn't hanging out with him or anything, but whenever we were in class, I'd laugh and joke and I'd talk to him and whatever. Well, I guess... took that as currency because he told some people in the school that we were best friends and hanging out and out having sleepovers and whatever. And then they knew me, you know, they were friends of mine. They came to me and were like, are you hanging out with this guy after school? And I didn't realize what he was doing, that he was looking for some sort of an ally. And instead of just, you know, going along with it, or I basically just shunned them and said, no, what are you crazy? I'm not I would never do that. And it was because I was afraid of the group. I was afraid of what the group would think of me. Going to exactly what you were talking about, when you're afraid of what your own group is going to think of you, it leads you to do and say things and go along with things that are against your nature.
Yeah.
I still think about that day, that moment.
Yeah. We talked about it before the podcast. I think that most people go through a experience like that, and it's something that they have to grapple with. Probably more now with groupthink than in the past, I would think. With me personally, I was on an audition with a friend, another musician. We both were auditioning for a band, and I got the gig. He didn't, and they were kind of just not very pleasant to him, and I didn't stick up for him. And he kind of disregarded me after that audition. He didn't want to be my friend anymore. And I feel bad about it to this day. So it stuck with me. And it still sticks with me when I think about it.
And it informs the rest of your life. The good side of that is we're going to stick up for whoever we want to stick up for now. You know, now that we've had years to sort of be stuck with that memory, we're never going to let that happen again. That's a good thing.
Did you order the code red?
I did the job.
Did you order the code red?
You're goddamn right I did.
It is good. And that's the thing with groupthink or tribalism, as you say. It's not enough when you're in a group. It's not enough to rise above it and to say, I'm not going to react. Like, if you don't react, you're as bad as the people that they're reacting against.
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah, I think it is. I think tribalism forces people to react whether they want to react or not, even if they don't believe in something, because it becomes virtue signaling. Look at me. Look at how wonderful I am because I reacted to this person, regardless if they're right or wrong. I don't want to think about that. Just let's react and react strongly.
What a great way to put it. Because it does feel like a lot of this cancel culture stuff feels holier than thou.
It absolutely is.
And by the way, look at your behavior now in the context of 10 years from now, and I'll bet you it will not hold up in 10 years.
Absolutely. I don't want to think about what I thought 10 or 12 years ago.
Living in your sister's basement with 5 kids while you're off every weekend doing wedding gigs at a whopping $60 a pop?
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
And the other problem is that there's no place for deeper thought. There's no place for debate. You're just wrong. If you're not part of my group, you're just wrong. I don't want to think about why you have your opinion. I don't want to look deeper or have any empathy for you. You're just wrong, all right? And that's it.
You're not worth the trouble it would take to hit you.
Case closed. And it's exacerbated by the media and by the news. The news works by putting the most devastating stuff in the headlines, things that are engineered to make you enraged.
Man, you are hitting all my buttons today because I totally agree with that. And I think a lot of people do business that way. I think a lot of people make a lot of money based on enraging you.
The funny thing is that most people know that. They understand the way media and the news is engineered, but yet it still enrages them. It certainly enrages me, and I'm aware of what's going on. Now let's talk about if there's ever a time or a situation where rage and anger are the correct response. Remembering that rage clouds the judgment. It doesn't clear your mind. So is there a time where acting rashly in a angry, rageful way is the correct response?
Well, I guess war. Yeah, maybe.
Well, all right. So that's interesting because rage, we talked about rage clouding the judgment, and anger clouds the judgment. When you're going into war, you want to be not clouded of mind. You want to be able to think this through.
I agree.
Can think of rage and anger as a weakness of character. It raises the blood pressure. It stabs the gut. It physically hurts you, the possessor of that anger and of that rage, more than the person that rage is pointed towards. So it's virtually always better to stop and deliberate before you act on something, not something we associate with rage. So even in the worst circumstances, rage probably isn't super helpful.
Yeah. So what about anger?
That's the thing. Are anger and rage completely different emotions, or are they the same? They're definitely related. I kind of believe one leads to the other. For instance, I'm angry that you cut me off, or I want to kill you because you cut me off.
You think you can do this to me?
Often in the privacy of your car, you may say things that are just awful that you would never say out loud to somebody. I know I have, unfortunately. It's a weakness of character.
Well, I've been on the phone with you every once in a while when something nasty might have come out of your mouth.
That's right. So then what's the call to action if you're not enraged by something? How do you combat injustice? And is rage a necessary component to a call to action?
Man, what a good point. But here's the thing. Now that I'm thinking about it, this is totally off the cuff. But when you look at protests, there are two kinds of protests, right? There is the Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr. protest, which I can definitely say anger and rage got them to that point. But the protests weren't a show of anger and rage.
That's key. It's time. They must have spent time. Like, we should be locked up when we're enraged so we can think about it.
And then go out and deal with
it. React.
And then go, right. And then react.
Yes.
Absolutely. You're right. Absolutely. Rage plus time equals positive protest. That's our equation.
That's it. All right. I have a thought. There's perhaps never been a more clear villain than Hitler. Right? World War II. Everything seemed much more clear during the 1930s and 40s. Good, bad, righteous, the right thing to do, the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
Hitler, really the archetypal villain. We use his name too much now, throwing it around, comparing people to Hitler, and that does a disservice to the people who are truly hurt by Hitler. An interesting thing to do is to look at how FDR and Churchill addressed their countries on the eve of World War II. So let's start with FDR. He said, "No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through absolute victory, with confidence in our armed forces, with abounding determination to our people. We will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God." And Churchill, this is a perfect quote, and it's one that I think most people know. He said, "I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat."
Wow, man, that dude knew how to speak.
Can you imagine a leader now saying that to their country, that it's going to be incredibly difficult? What's going to happen? Things are not going well. Everything is always going so fabulously. I should also mention FDR's inaugural speech. When President Roosevelt became president, it was the early 1930s. It was during the Great Depression, and he had to give a speech that addressed the Great Depression. People were really, really hurting all around the world. So what did he say to the United States? And he has a really famous quote. I thought the quote was from World War II. It's not. It's from his inaugural, I know I'm mispronouncing it, address. So what did he say? He said, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." So I ask you a question. Does that sound like rage, or does it sound like cold, hard determination and sacrifice?
We're going to go into a little history that I looked up into war. I want you to think of this theme. And this is another problem with letting people get you enraged, is that those in power use your anger to further their interests, right? And I want to show you historically how that happens over and over and over again. So, for example, and some of these are ridiculous, but they're absolutely true. There was a war of Jenkins' ear. Now, in 1938, his name's Robert Jenkins. He was a British mariner, and he went to Parliament with a severed ear. It was his ear. And he blamed a member of the Spanish Coast Guard. The British declared war on Spain over this ear. But was it really the ear? Or was it the fact that really they had been angry since 1700 because of territorial disputes? And Jenkins' ear was just the catalyst. So they go to war in 1938 when they've been pissed off for 38 years before that. There's another war called the Pastry War. This is in Mexico City in 1828, right? A corrupt election had just happened in Mexico, and rioters took to the streets, and they ended up destroying this French expatriate's pastry shop. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He complains, which doesn't actually get to the king of France until like 10 years later. At that time, the king was already really angry with Mexico for not paying back millions in loans. So he orders Mexico to compensate the pastry chef by paying him 600,000 pesos. And of course, that's a ridiculous number. They refuse. The king sends the French fleet to Veracruz in 1938 and begins bombing the city of San Juan. Santa Anna, the great Mexican general, comes out of retirement to fight and is wounded and loses his leg. And this fight goes on and on and on until the British finally step in and broker a deal. But it was all because the king was just pissed off and he used that to further his interest. Now we get to the biggest one of all, which is World War I. So everybody knows the story that the Austria-Hungary Archduke Franz Ferdinand gets assassinated on a trip. And that's what started World War I. Like, that's the catalyst, right? What we don't know, and I'll get into the details of that, but what we don't know is that France and Germany were already really angry with each other. Germany had already annexed a French territory called the Alsace-Lorraine. And France wanted it back. And Germany was also looking to expand elsewhere, was building a big navy, and that was upsetting England. And everybody's military technology was advancing really, really fast. So believe it or not, a lot of the European countries were kind of eager to try it out and flex their muscle. They were ready. They were getting ready for war anyway. So then there's this group in Sarajevo, which is in Austria-Hungary. There's a group of Serbs and Bosnians who hated living there. So when the Archduke goes there on kind of a mission of mercy, he's going there to visit some soldiers. He's in this open-top car. His trip is published in advance, and assassins are waiting. Now, on a side note, we know that they kill him. But on a side note, they actually first missed him. And then he goes back out to visit the wounded soldiers. He doesn't go home. He goes back out. And in this open car, and the driver takes a wrong turn and they end up in front of one of the assassins and they shoot him dead. But here's the thing. Now, Austria-Hungary is angry and blames the Serbian government. They go to Germany and say, hey, we're going to war with Serbia. Germany is happy because they believe that Russia and France will get pulled in, which is exactly what they want. They want to go to war with France in particular. It's this another opportunity for people to use this tragedy to just enhance what they were already looking to do in the first place, right? People in power. One of our beloved mythological stories uses the same theme. The Trojan War was fought over Helen leaving her husband for a member of Troy's royal family. The husband was the brother of the Greek king who was waiting for an excuse to take down the great city of Troy. That's in our literature. And way before the examples I'm giving here, you know? So it's just part of what we do, it seems like. The wealthy and the people in power use these incidents and our anger and our rage, they gin up our rage as a society and use that as an excuse to then go to war.
Absolutely. There's an interesting Dan Carlin podcast on World War One, which really brings up why something that in the United States we don't study enough. We think about World War II far more than we do World War One, and he really brings up on how incredibly formative for the planet World War One was, and that it really did form the modern world more than World War II did. And he also talks about Gavriela Princip, the person that shot Archduke Franz Ferdinand, and how he was really a nobody and sort of could think of someone who was just not amounting to anything in his life. And this nobody, his bullet, was the catalyst to start World War One. It's interesting how this person out of
there
nowhere that was amounting to very started World War One, which resulted in the modern world. No one would ever have looked back at Gavriela Princip and thought that, including himself. I doubt he would have thought that. That's pretty interesting. Also, Bismarckian politics. Bismarck had this incredible web of treaties that he created. And once one country joined the war, another country was forced in. It was a domino effect. Just countries were falling over consistently because of these treaties.
Yeah.
So it didn't take much for World War One to start. And it was a powder keg just waiting to ignite, if you will. And the thought I have is that with war, you have unbelievable sacrifice. But now, with all our rage, I wonder, would we be willing to sacrifice? You know, sure, we're keyboard warriors, we're outraged, but would we actually be willing to sacrifice? I know me, I don't think I would be. I couldn't be bothered to sacrifice, but of course people are willing to post very nasty things.
I love the keyboard warrior. That is a great term. I'm going to be using that from now on. I know where you're going with this, so lead us right in.
The anonymity of the web has allowed us to rage without consequence, at least to the person that is raging, the ragee. But the recipient of that rage and of those comments, it can be pretty devastating.
I may have told this story on here, but I had a good friend from high school who is politically, we're different, but you know, we agree on some things, we disagree on other things. But I was on Facebook and something got me to say something political. And he jumped in and just was commenting and he was pointing out, you know, the other side. And he was actually doing it in a very intelligent way. And I, you know, I was learning something from his perspective, which I often do because he's a very smart guy. Now, this is an old friend from high school. All of a sudden, a bunch of my other friends decided to jump in. And I guess they thought they were defending me, but they were they really just wanted to yell at him, basically, for his political opinion. And this is years ago. This isn't even recent. This is a while back.
Right. So we were less enraged.
They just beat up on him to the point, and he, you know, came back and he was making some great points and he was, you know, doing it for a little while. And finally, it was just like him against like eight other people. And I had to jump in and say, guys, this is a friend of mine. I like this guy. And by the way, he's a very intelligent guy and is making some really good points. Just stop. I need you to stop or I'm not going to post on here anymore. And that was the last political post I ever made. And this was years ago.
Yeah, this is a Tracy comment. You can never take back what you've said, whether it be on the web or in person. Is it ever really worth it in anger to just lash out at somebody?
I know. And good question. Now, we are lucky. We have a fortunate relationship where we've been able to be angry at each other and say some rough things. But, you know, we've gotten really angry at each other. And yet we were able to get past it and with pretty quickly, very easily. We've talked about this a lot, you know, on this show. But other people, a phrase in anger may forever change that relationship. Not for the better.
What is your major malfunction, numbnuts?
Yeah, and a lot of that comes down to doubt, meaning we don't doubt our friendship and we don't doubt each other. I think often anger is used to hide fear and doubt.
Which means if somebody's angry at you, maybe you should feel, you know, concerned for them a little bit and try and get, you know what I'm saying? Like,
that's a really good point.
Right, because you don't know. They could be in pain somewhere. And you just don't know. This is their way of dealing with it.
That's really difficult for me, because when I see someone commenting online with no regard to the feelings of the person they're commenting towards in an impolite way, even if I agree with their viewpoint, it's very difficult for me to look past the way they comment.
Oh, you said such a big word for me too, polite. When did we lose the ability to debate politely? Or at least with some sense of courtesy, common courtesy, that you're probably dealing with somebody who, if you met on the street or at a concert or at a restaurant, you'd probably get along with just fine. But because you're online, the idea of being civil and being polite and being courteous gets thrown out just because you disagree with them.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
And I've heard people say, and even write on the web, things that are unbelievable. For instance, wishing someone would die. It's unbelievable. I've heard that before. I wish that person would die. Take a step back. Do you really mean that? That's pretty serious.
There's a lot of people saying that right now.
Yeah, but they're saying it about people generally in politics or people that have opposing views to them. That's really serious business. Take a step back. Are you being rational? Do you really wish someone that has an opposing view to you would die? Wow.
It's a madhouse! A madhouse!
It's scary because I've had that thought. And I've never vocalized it, but I've had that thought, and that always scares me about myself. Why am I? Are you kidding? Am I that? I don't know this person.
Well, there's a really big difference between having the thought, a passing thought, and actually writing about it and posting about it on the web. That's a big, big difference. And it's been so intensified lately with group thought. It's like we're like the angry mob going after Frankenstein. And by the way, that wasn't the right thing to do either. And could it possibly be that some small part of their opinion, of the other group's opinion, could have some truth to it? Just a little, mind you, not a lot, just the smallest fiber of truth. Or no, absolutely, they are evil. Nothing is right about their opinion. 100% wrong. This sounds a lot like rage to me.
He's an absentee landlord. Worship that never.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point, because you and I have talked about off mic that there are podcasts or people that we've heard debate. And the ones that are the calmest and backed up with facts, and they have their facts and whatever, but that you can't get angry, are the ones that, I guess, win the debate, really. Because ultimately you're watching this thing going, well, that person can't be gotten to because they feel like they have the facts on their side and they have truth on their side. And so they're just not going to get rattled. They're going to debate you, but they're not going to let you rattle them.
So I agree with you, but I wonder if other people do. Because groupthink doesn't foster subtleties and empathy. So the other is always 100% wrong. There can be no truth in an opinion that's other. It just all seems so ugly to me. It's judgmental, it's sanctimonious, it's hypocritical. You'll judge others, but you will never allow anyone to judge you. It smells a lot like fear to me.
Right. And it's interesting because you watch people get triggered, right? And then it causes me to look in at myself and because I've been triggered. You know, what triggers me? And what triggers you? You know, when we've gotten triggered, what is usually at the core? And the interesting thing is, for both of us, it's kind of the same thing.
I want my MTV!
We both seem to get triggered when we think, particularly with each other, if it's either one of us, we're feeling disrespected in some way or not.
It's the Italian in us. We're both about respect. It's all about respect for me, yeah.
It's amazing. And it's usually the truth, in the sense that if I'm angry about something, it's usually that I stopped listening to you for some reason and I'm not really hearing what you're telling me. And that is disrespectful. Mm-hmm. Even though it's not meant to be disrespectful, when you're not giving somebody a chance to give their point of view and to say something, it's being disrespectful. And this, you know, that mm-hmm. goes both ways. But
and for me, even if I'm in the wrong and you're in the right and you're delivering your correct argument disrespectfully, I don't care. I don't want to listen, because you have to deliver it respectfully for me to care, which I know is crazy because in the heat of an argument, it's really difficult to be respectful. And the thing with social media, too, what we're talking about the web, but just to finish our thoughts with that, is that social media is programmed to put the most offensive and the most vicious and self-righteous post to the top. It's programmed to make you want to respond and for your response to be equally rage-filled.
And why is that? Because their self-interest is to keep you on the platform.
Mm-hmm.
When they recognize, when they enrage you, you stay on the platform longer because you're involved and you're posting comments, and they decide that's the best way to keep you on, then that's what they're going to do. They're going to show you the stuff that enrages you. They're going to show you the stuff that keeps you on their platform so they make more money. That's the way that works. It's incredible.
And perhaps it's all about pride. Our pride gets hurt when someone disagrees with us. And when your pride gets hurt, it's almost as if you're getting physically assaulted, at least as far as your body is concerned. Your adrenaline rushes. It feels physical. You're having a physical response to it. So that naturally creates an angry or even rageful feeling. In the way back, you'd just get into a physical fight if you felt that way. But not now. Now the release that we have for that toxic anger is the web and your keyboard. So instead of hitting each other, we're verbally hitting each other.
I know. And I think an exercise that everybody should try, and I mean everybody, if you find yourself getting angry, before you say something, imagine that person standing in front of you. And then decide whether you could say exactly what you're planning on typing. Because chances are, you do not have the guts to really say what you're going to type on that chat or on that social media.
All right, but then what's the difference between rage and outrage? The mood of our time is definitely, outcome has been rage. So if we look at the definition of outrage, it's an act that violates the standard definition of behavior and taste. But when we look at rage, it's violent, uncontrollable anger. So to me, outrage seems more communal, and rage seems individual. Outrage is what we feel in a group. Our reaction to it is rage. And I think it's something to think about.
Just the term outrage, when you think of outrage, it sounds like rage that's pushed outward. So it actually sounds like more of a physical word. Do you know what I'm saying? But it's actually the way you're framing it, it's not.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's really interesting.
Well, just if you look at the definition of it, that's what it seems like to me.
No, it makes sense.
I have a little final thought for us. There are definitely times when anger and rage are the correct response, but acting on it seems never to be a good idea. If we could just take a breath a moment before we do or post something, we'd probably be a lot happier. And I'd say the most powerful tool we have to overcome anger is laughter.
Yeah, and it really is. So it's a great place to leave it. We are the Jocular Pugilists. If you haven't yet, go on the website and take a look at the new glasses that we have. They're Rocks glasses. They have our logo on them. They're really, really beautiful glasses. And we have a promotion going right now where you can get the glass for free if you have three people that we'll go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, leave a rating and review. So those are three of your friends or three people that you know that are willing to do that. You let us know that you've done that and show us those reviews, and we're going to send you a glass. And I think you're really going to like it. So anyway, that's the jocularpugilist.com, the website. You can also support us by yourself if you haven't done so yet. Leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can leave a 5-star rating on Spotify as well and follow us there. And you can follow us on social media where we are around. Thank you so much for being part of the community. We're having a great time doing this. We've got more things coming. And you know what? We will see you in about a week, right, Tomas?
1 week.
1 week. Well,
that's it. It enrages me that I have to do this once a week.
I really do get angry when I'm editing. I'll tell you that for sure.
Phil, do not go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
All right, man. I'll see you next time.